Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Creative Differences Podcast, the podcast that just might go on an unannounced 2 months hiatus at any time. My name is Dallas, a.k.a. Him Halpert, a.k.a. Hacksaw Him Duggan, a.k.a. Hemi Neutron. And boy, do we got a lot of things to talk about today.
Hi, my name's Gabby. And for once, I'm not entirely here just for the vibes.
Oh, look at you.
Cassie, and man, it's like I don't watch much, but when I do watch stuff, I learn some things about myself.
Can't wait for that.
And I'm Demi, and for once, I've only watched one of the things that we are reviewing today, so I'm hoping to pull a Cassie and just disappear after I'm done reviewing my thing. Welcome to another episode of the Creative... I know, right? It's a first, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. I'm surprised I remember how to say all that. Today, we will be reviewing, dear God, Eleanor the Great, Him, The Long Walk, Alien Earth, and Chief of War.
Yep. So many things. Welcome back, everybody. Before we do all that, you know, please like, please share, please subscribe, please comment. Do all that nonsense. Because maybe, that will incentivize us to not disappear for months at a time.
Or we can at least find somebody who can edit when I'm busy working.
Yeah. Or then next time we'll just tell you if we're going to be gone for a bit.
To be fair, we may have been gone for 2 months, but we're coming back swinging.
We are. Yep. Mad reviews. And everybody's here.
Yeah.
When's the last time y'all heard from Gabby?
Yeah. I was trying to make it today really hard.
All right, guys. I guess we're jumping into it. We're starting off with Eleanor the Great, which is the most recent movie to have come out. I'm the only one to have seen it. And it is directed by Scarlett Johansson. Y'all know who Scarlett Johansson is. She's most well known for being in stuff like The Avengers, Jurassic World Rebirth, Marriage Story, Jojo Rabbit. Y'all done seen her in something. Yeah, this is her directorial debut for a feature film. It is written by Tori Common, and it stars June Squibb, Aaron Kellyman, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Jessica Hecht, and Rita Zohar. And the IMDb summary is, after a devastating loss, witty and proudly troublesome, Eleanor Morgenstein, 94, tells a tale that takes a dangerous life of its own. I'm going to be upfront with y'all. The cheat code to my feelings is main characters that are grieving their dead moms.
Figured that.
You give me a main character that is still dealing with the feelings about the fact that their mom has passed away, and that's an easy way to get me to cry. It happened earlier this week when I went to go see A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey.
Man, they're coming for you.
It happened again with Eleanor the Great. It's also been happening in the books I've been reading lately. They get in me, man.
It's everywhere.
It's happening.
Oof. It's everywhere. Everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think that this movie will be probably pretty divisive based on how you feel about what the plot is.
All right.
Because even I went into the movie thinking I knew what I was getting into, and then the plot kicked in and I was like, this is not what I thought I was getting into. Oh my gosh, this is, oh wow, here's what we're doing. Okay. I've seen a lot of divisive reviews. It's been really fun. I've actually been reading a lot of reviews for this film just to see a lot of different people's like perspectives on it. And yeah, it's pretty divisive based on how you feel about the plot, which therefore probably informs how you feel about the characters and stuff like that. Personally, I think once the plot kicked in, once I knew what the plot was, I was like, oh, I know exactly how this movie goes. I know where we're going. I know what inevitable plot points we have to hit. However, that's never necessarily a negative to me. It matters more so how you execute the things that I know that you're going to have to execute.
Right.
I think that Scarlett Johansson did a pretty good job with directing this movie. I think what you can tell most from her directing of this film is how good of an actor's director she is, which she should be. She's been acting since she was a child. That's the craft that she has mastered, and now she's trying directing. I think that she just pulls out like these really beautiful performances out of an already very talented cast.
Nice.
I think June Squibb gives one of my favorite performances of the year. Her character makes a mistake that a lot of people might consider unforgivable in this movie.
Uh-oh.
But the character never, like, I think the character is consistently likable and charming and like very funny and also very sincere. And like, there's a level of like, I think the movie does a good job of, if you are able to move past what that mistake is, I think the movie does a good job of showing empathy to this character and giving us an understanding as to why she makes the decision that she does. And I think that's very important because I feel like this movie, not just being about grief, is also about empathy and not necessarily like saying that what was done is justifiable, but also like you can understand a person still without having to justify their actions. Also, Erin Kellyman, my girl, love her to bits. Y'all know I love me some Erin Kellyman.
Yep.
Phenomenal. Another one of my favorite performances of the year. Like, she's so underrated. She should be like one of the brightest stars in Hollywood right now, and she's not, and I need her to be because God, she's so good. There's just like a full scene of just her crying. She doesn't say anything. She just cries, and I'm just like, God, you're amazing. Why are you so good? Her performances are always so like relatable and genuine, and she's just such a great actress. And it does my heart good to know that. I was reading an interview with the casting directors of this movie, and then it made me so happy that like they were like, yeah, well, Erin gave an amazing audition. But on top of that, I had recently been watching a movie that she had just done, and I'd been watching Willow. And I was like, yes, that's it. That's it right there.
Right.
Jade has for the last few years now has been like, to me, the best character that Erin Kellyman has gotten to play because of the amount of range that she was able to show in that role. And I think that her character Nina in this movie kind of like is competing for the best. It might actually be her best role, to be honest. It's probably her best acting performance, honestly. Even though Jade is my favorite character she's ever played. And then I got to mention Rita Zohar, who gives a stunning performance as the character Bessie, who is a Holocaust survivor, and the actual actress is also a Holocaust survivor.
Mm. Oh, goodness.
Just incredible, incredible, incredible work. And I can't say much more about that because then I'd be spoiling things in the movie and I don't want to do that. But yeah, like I said, I think like the story is predictable. You know where it's going, but I think it's got so much heart in it. And I love that, man. There's so much heart, and like it really got me in my feelings. I like was crying and sniffling by the end of the movie. I heard other people in the theater also crying and sniffling. One of the things that I love about movies is that like they give you the opportunity to explore like stories and situations that you would like typically write off, or like maybe you'd hear about a person doing a thing and you'd be like, yo, that's trash, bro. I don't want to hear any more of that. But like movies give you the opportunity to actually explore those things and like feel what the characters are feeling and through that.
Mm, yeah.
Without any sort of like, I don't know. You get to explore humanity and feelings and stuff like that that you probably otherwise would not get to explore. And that's, I think, one of the great benefits of movie making.
Yeah. Having a space free of consequence. Like, you just watch the movie, you sit with it, you think about it, but ultimately, like, it's not really, like, this is fiction.
Hope that that's never happened.
Yeah.
There's a conversation about that going on with Gen V right now that we can talk about off mic because we're not talking about Gen V today. Or we can wait till we review it.
Yeah. I feel like Scarlett Johansson did what she set out to do. I've seen a lot of people say that they hope that in her next directorial attempt that she takes makes some bolder choices with her directing. And I can see what they mean by that. But also, like, I don't mind that she went like a more simplistic route with directing this movie.
Yeah.
There's a line in Hamilton that says, who lives, who dies, who tells your story. And I feel like that's a theme that's heavily weaved in this movie. I think it's a very interesting thread to weave in this film about grief. And also, I think it leaves you thinking about that question, especially in consideration of what the actual plot is. Okay. But yeah, I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I probably enjoyed it a lot more than most, but it's coming from somebody who is still grieving. So, you know, take that into consideration.
Yeah.
Another thing, so one of my favorite things that I do on my Letterboxd reviews lately, if I write a longer review, is I have this thing at the end of my reviews that I call my hyperfixation of the movie.
Sounds applicable to you.
I love it. So for this movie, my hyperfixation was Erin Kellyman's wardrobe. When Nina tells Eleanor she's gay, yeah, girl, we could tell.
Does she dress like you?
I'll just... Not really, like... Nah, sometimes yes, but like nah. But there were like outfits that she was wearing. Like it, she doesn't say that she's gay until like about halfway through the movie. Mm-hmm. But like even before then, I was like, "Your character's gay, right? Like you're you're not dressing like this for kicks. Like you're
Real recognize real, man.
I was like, y'all borrowed some of this from Aaron Kellyman's closet or something, right? What?
Cassie, are you good? You're making some faces up there.
I'm fine.
Okay, cool. Just making sure. Just want to check on you.
But yeah, I liked the movie. I thought it was very heartfelt. Got me in my feelings. Got me thinking about grief. Also, their portrayal of old ladies, fantastic, on par. I know, because my grandmother lives right next door. So, yeah.
Shout out to old ladies.
And that's it for me. I'm about to disappear into the background.
Woo! Into that I mean, head. Not woo, but like, for once, you get to chill.
Gabby's like, get out.
I'll see you guys at the end of the episode.
Gabby said, get. All right, we're taking it to the opposite side of the spectrum. Black football players and weird horror movies. Him. It is directed by Justin Tipping, who wrote and directed the movie Kicks. I don't know. I didn't see it. It's written by Justin Tipping, Skip Bronchi, and Zach Akers. Skip and Zach created the show Limetown. I don't know. I didn't see it. And the movie stars Tyreek Withers, Marlon Wayans, Julia Fox, and Tim Heidecker. There's also other people. These are the main ones. Oh, Jim Jefferies is there, the Australian comedian. That was super random.
Julia Fox is in it?
Julia
and
Fox.
And Jim Jefferies, what are you doing here?
There's a random cast. Yeah, Julia Fox in there, being weird, as she does. IMDb summary is, a young athlete descends into a world of terror when he's invited to train with a legendary champion whose charisma curdles into something darker.
Yikes.
So I've been very, very, very much looking forward to this movie, and I was disappointed. Is the movie bad?
What?
I don't think so. Is it good? I don't think so.
Oh, no.
But it's not like a... I can't say it's meh or it's like fine because it swings. It takes some big swings, and I admire that. I really want to like this movie. And there are good things about it. First thing I'll say, and I've been saying this a lot to anyone who will listen, is that I feel like this movie's in an interesting position of trying to cater to two audiences. So like if you picture a Venn diagram, on one side you have football fans, specifically black football fans, who probably don't watch a lot of like weird horror, like A24 neon type horror movies. And then you have the people who are into surreal horror, a lot of whom probably don't care too much about football. And you got to get that middle ground.
Interesting.
And I feel like if the movie was executed better, it would bridge that gap better because you have people who just like, I don't care about football, but this is a dope movie. Or, you know, that was a little weird, but I rock with it. And I'm kind of the middle ground. I don't watch a lot of weird, surreal horror.
It does kind of feel like you.
Yeah, I'm what you could aim for that middle ground of an audience.
I feel like you and I should have seen this together.
That would be interesting. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. But it does some interesting things, and it does things well. Like, Marlon Wayans is great. Tyreek Withers is great. Really good performances. The visuals are awesome. A lot of people are saying that Justin Tipping should do music videos because, like, there's a very stylistic look to a lot of this. He does this, like, weird Mortal Kombat thing sometimes when he shows the injuries, like an X-ray vision.
Oh, no.
Cool.
Yeah, which is super dope. But also, through the lens of football, it's even more, like, visceral because these are football injuries that happen. I'm like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, visually, it's great. Performances are really good. The story in the script is like, I think you nailed a lot of the football stuff. It says some interesting things. A lot of people who watch football and are aware of it compare the scout combine to like basically an auction block. Like it's really kind of gross. Like they take these college kids and they're like, how long are your arms? How high can you jump? Boy, let me see if you can do this and that and that. And it's like, on paper, it's like, yeah, we need to see how good you are at this sport. But you have a bunch of old white men who own these teams and are like, I want to buy this player. Let me see how fast he can run. Let me see how high he can jump.
Yeah.
And the movie addresses that really well. Even the way that, like, a lot of kids, particularly black kids, if you look at any football team, grow up being told, like, this is what you're going to do. You got to sacrifice to make this work. The movie actually uses the term grooming toward the end about like, we groomed you to be this champion, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, like little kids who are like six, they're being told like, oh, you know, get back out there, be tough, be strong. You have to win at all costs. And it's like the type of people who like are mad at participation trophies.
Okay.
And that always pisses me off because it's like, okay, you're upset that a 7-year-old got a trophy and didn't win. but you're like, oh, the kids are soft these days. But okay, you're 37 and you're mad that a child got a piece of metal. Who's really soft?
Not to mention, the children didn't come up with that idea.
Right. They weren't like, give me a trophy.
Yeah. It's a piece of metal. It's a piece of plastic, most likely.
True.
Right.
Like, yeah.
They just handed it to him. But that is.
They took you to Shakey's and gave you a piece of plastic and called it a day.
Right. Like, let the kids have a little piece of plastic in their pizza. Weirdo.
Like, the kids worked hard anyway. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not like no one didn't try.
And their children. But I'm getting slightly off topic.
Go on.
Yeah. The movie gets really. I don't even know how, like, it's so close to being a movie that I like. And there's just some things about the execution, especially toward the end, where I'm like, we are off the rails, guys. And it goes into this, like, surreal, like, oh, this is a nightmare sequence. And then this thing that happened that was exactly like that is not a nightmare. So I'm like, wait, did the other thing happen?
Oh.
I don't know.
Interesting.
And then Marlon's very good, but sometimes, and this might just be how I see Marlon as, you know, funny.
A comedian.
Sometimes it ventures into like, you're acting so crazy, I can't really take you seriously. And, you know, I don't know if that's a directing thing or a writing thing. My biggest issue is some of the writing choices and the way that, like, where the story ends up. It's almost like, yeah, I get why this ended up here from where we were going, but it's just like, something about how you did it, it just didn't work for me. And I wish you would have done it differently. Yeah, it has the ingredients to be a good movie. To use a football analogy, it's like you did it was a great play. You did a really good play, and then you fumbled at the end. And now we're just going to remember that you fumbled because you didn't score. The other team has the ball now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not bad. And I will say this. I feel like a lot of times when I watch, and I almost struggle to call this a black horror movie because the cast, like, the stars are black, but Justin Tipping, to my knowledge, is not. But movies that, if you look at this movie, like, oh, yeah, black people everywhere. Soundtrack is fire, by the way. I want those movies to get the latitude that white weird horror gets. Because white horror movies will do all kind of weird nonsense. And if it doesn't make sense, people will be like, ah, you know, it's just
the vision.
It's just the vision. It's the creativity.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard people who are, and this isn't specifically horror.
Put a giant penis monster in his movie and it worked. People
exactly. And obviously not everyone's going to be down with that, but some people were like, oh, you know, that's Ari being Ari, man. Like, I've heard people talk about David Lynch movies don't make sense, but they're so good. And then I've heard people talk about Us didn't make sense toward the end, so it's a bad movie. And like,
they're more forgiving with they're less forgiving with people of color, essentially.
Yeah. Right? And I want, like, yo, if you're going to be down for some weirdness, be down for some weirdness.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying that people are doing that with this because, you know, they didn't execute it all that well. But in general, give us our grace as blacks. But yeah, that's him. A little disappointing, right. But it looks good. Justin Tipping, keep it up. Do this visual stuff a lot. All right.
All right, Dallas, what's your next? You got another one, I know.
Me and Cassie are going to talk about The Long Walk.
Woo.
What a movie. What a depressing ass movie. They walk in. The Long Walk is directed by Francis Lawrence. Francis Lawrence, you may know as director of all the Hunger Games, except for the first one.
Yo.
Yeah.
He also directed I Am Legend, which leads me to the question. Francis, are you good? We need to have a talk.
I got
to
start asking,
listen,
are you good?
He likes a dystopian movie, it seems like.
This is also the same man who gave us the Rock Your Body by Justin Timberlake music video.
That's
so
true. He was a music video director.
He definitely has range, but I'm looking at his filmography choices like, hey, man, you good? We'll talk about it. The movie is written by J.T. Molnar, who wrote and directed Strange Darling, which is why I mentioned Strange Darling off mic. Movie stars Cooper Hoffman, David Johnson, Garrett Waring, Toot Nyot, I should have looked up how to say that. I'm sorry. Charlie Plummer, Ben Wang, Roman Griffin Davis, shout out Jojo Rabbit, Josh Hamilton, Judy Greer, and Mark Hamill as the major. And it's based on the 1979 novel of the same name by Stephen King under his pseudonym Richard Bachman, which, fun fact, is not the first book he published, but is the first one he started to write because he wrote it in college when he was 19. What a man. IMDb summary says, a group of teenage boys compete in an annual contest known as the Long Walk, in which they must maintain a certain walking speed. Okay, so I'm not going to finish it. But it's one of those things that's like, if you can go in not knowing, it's great. But if you see any marketing, you're not going to not know. And I don't even really think there's a way to talk about it without saying it. Oh, well. Cassie, what'd you think of The Long Walk?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew going in what I was signing up for, and yet I still didn't think it would get me, like, feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, it got me feeling. It's rough.
Oh, it's so rough. Rough is the perfect way to describe this movie.
Yeah, I just, like obviously, the premise, walk for a while, walk until you can't walk anymore. What happens after that? Well, like, yeah, it's not going to be a happy time.
No.
But damn.
And I'm so glad you like it, because I really like it too. And it's so bleak. It's one of those movies that I walked out and was like, that was awesome. It was so good. I probably will never watch it again.
That was my exact thought. Like, oh, I love that. I don't think I'll watch it again, though.
Why did I do this to myself? Oh, there's so much about, like, the acting. Everyone is great.
Yo.
I need to talk about David Johnson. Because David Johnson was the standout for me in Alien Romulus last year. And he was playing just, like, such a great dude.
Oh, shit. Was he?
Yeah, he's the android, Andy.
Oh, my God. He's Andy?
Android broke my heart.
Wow. Yeah. He's good.
He's so good. And he's
so good.
At this point, he's like typecast as just like the best guy around. He's the best guy around.
But it works.
It works. And I was like, what a way to be typecast. It's just a solid dude.
He was the best guy around.
What about the people he murdered?
What murder?
But yeah, he killed it in this. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to see more of him. Cooper Hoffman, who I found out much later, is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which makes sense given his face and last name.
His face and last name.
Also, yeah, very good.
Connect those dots.
What did you say, Cassie?
You could connect those dots. I didn't. Yeah. But you could.
Easy dots. I didn't connect them either. But also great. Like the friendship and relationship that these two have, it really makes this movie work. And the premise of you're going to watch a bunch of boys walk for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Sounds like, how could you make me want to do that? But the acting is great. The dialogue, the messaging, like Pete, who's David's character, his just hope and optimism really makes you feel like you're not watching a freaking Francis Lawrence movie, because all he likes is freaking dystopia. But, and you get so many interesting characters, because you get them, and then you get Bartowski, what's his name? The bad one.
Which one's? Oh, Barkovich?
Barkovich, thank you.
Oh, yeah. He's the blonde one who's mean. Yeah.
The mean one who could easily just be the mean one in a, like, flatter written story. But by the time we get to the end of his story, there's more there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I hated this guy, and I kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
Only a little bit. There's so many interesting characters, so many interesting themes.
I just
got a
shout out to Art for repping the accent the entire time. That was probably my favorite part of the movie. Just this, like, Brooklyn-ass accent.
Which one are you talking about?
He's the Asian kid who's chewing the gum all the time.
Oh, Ben Wang, or Wong. He was great. And he made the movie surprisingly funny, and I appreciated that. Because I needed to laugh.
He
so
needed
sad.
Something.
Just so very sad.
Goodness. But
yeah, he's great. And it honestly, it feels like a war movie, and I don't really watch war movies because, you know.
It does.
It's just
it does.
So life much. But you have this group of young dudes together, and they're like, we're going to get through this. You know they're not all going to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
But they bond, and they come together in this way that when one of them goes, it's like, you feel it. And there's a line where someone, I think Pete says, like, you'll get used to it. And Ray says, that's what I'm afraid of, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and I was like, them niggas was right. And J2, you put your foot in this, JT. And I gotta say, Judy Greer, she needs to change her name to Judy Tears, because she had me in there.
Oh,
eyes
damn.
Watering.
Oh, eyes watering. Dallas.
Mm.
That never happens.
So it happens rarely, but it does happen. There's a scene in there when she's Ray's mom. She's the main dude's mom. And we haven't really given any kind of backstory or setup, but the long walk is 50 boys, one from each state, and they walk. You can't walk no more, basically. And it's Ray's home state, probably why he's the main character. And he sees her at some point during the walk, and it's been long enough that, like, his feet are bloody, his shoes don't fell apart.
He lost his shoes already at that point.
Yeah, and she sees him, and, like, the way she reacts to just seeing his feet, like, the pain, and then when he sees her, man, when he starts running toward her, and then, like, her whole reaction, I was just like, why'd I do this to myself? Why am I here?
Aww.
But it's so good. They need an Oscar for, like, best single scene that ripped everybody's heart out and give it to Judy Greer.
I don't think I'd give it to that one in this movie, but I respect it.
Do you have one that you can say without a spoiler?
I mean, I think the line is, I did it all wrong.
Oh, man.
That hurt.
That hurt. So much of this movie is just that hurt, but it was so good.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's so good.
It's such a good movie. I'm glad we're on the same page. And there's just, everybody in it is so good. And one thing that, I'm going to talk about Mark Hamill. One thing that Mark Hamill talked about in a podcast I saw he was on with Mark Maron, he talked about the way the movie does violence. And to be honest, I think he kind of undersold the violence because he says that first one is like the most like in your face. And then after that, they don't do it as much like that. And that's not entirely true, man.
No.
But I see what he means because that one was very like, oh my God, we're here now.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe he didn't see the final cut before he said that. But Mark Hamill's great. He's said that this is his most evil character, which is funny to me because, you know, Ozai, the Joker. But he might be right.
He's got some evil.
He also plays Skeletor in Masters of the Universe.
Skeletor. He's played so many like iconic
villains. The embodiment of evil.
There's something about telling these boys to sack up like 10 different times and then shooting them. That's just like, you're garbage.
What?
He's a bad man.
Yeah.
Damn.
He's a bad man. Also, last thing I'll say is that talking about my experience watching the movie, there was this group of teenagers sitting next to me. And I'm never a fan of that. Because, you know, like sometimes they're going to be talking, making jokes, blah, blah, blah. Especially a movie like this that's super serious. And toward the very, very end, the last pew-pew, I'm hearing to my right what kind of sounds like snickering. And I'm like... This kid's a psychopath because there's there's nothing you could finally like. There's nothing you could find humor in this moment. And I like, you know, I turn a little bit, get my peripherals going, look at him. This boy was sobbing.
Oh no!
He was
poor baby.
Like,
oh,
I almost want to like pat him on the shoulder, like, "Yo, bro, we're gonna be all right, man." Just... He was going through it. Like, I don't know if you've seen that gif of the guy with the earphones in and he's like sitting at a desk and he's crying super loud. It looked like that.
Damn.
I was like, oh, I'm glad you're sobbing and not laughing because I'd be
this
worried about you.
Boy.
Now I'm just like, oh, you're going to be all right, kid.
Dallas is glad you're in pain,
like...
child.
You should be. It was a painful moment. Yeah, like the credits rolled, the lights came up, and he was like composing himself.
Yeah.
Damn. But I get it.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So
before we
good
move
luck,
on,
guys.
I know Dallas wants to talk about Francis Lawrence's need to make apocalyptic movies. But personally, I want to have a conversation with him about all these 90s R&B music videos that he directed.
What a range to have.
right?
There's so many of them. But I also want to thank him for the Someone to Call My Lover music video by Janet Jackson. Yep, love that video. Mm. I'm a Slave for You by Britney Spears. Did that.
He did that one?
Wow.
Apparently he did Whenever Wherever by Shakira.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
Or did the world get worse? What happened?
Oh, it got worse. He also did Black Suits Come and Nod Your Head by Will Smith.
Wow.
Thank you for that, sir. He also did Cry Me a River. He did Skater Boy by Avril Lavigne.
He did Cry Me a River? He's the Jenny one that did that?
Jenny from the Block by Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, that one's a classic.
He also did oh my gosh, I'm Like a Bird by Nelly Furtado.
Like, who is this
Independent
man?
Woman Part 1 by Destiny's Child.
Ooh.
Yo.
Like, okay, range.
Waiting for Tonight by Jennifer Lopez.
Waiting for Tonight.
Francis got some heat. Okay.
What? He's got some heats under the music. And that's only Buttons by the Pussycat Dolls.
Wow.
Bruh.
He did Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Damn. That's crazy. He's iconic.
His last ever music video was Run the World Girls by Beyonce.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, Francis. That's why they were like, you know what? Yeah, you can direct movies.
And then he was like, I want to watch kids kill each other.
He's like, Hunger Games.
He also directed Water for Elephants?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
The Rob Pattinson movie?
And Constantine. Starring Keanu Reeves.
He also did Slumberland, which I have seen.
Constantine? I love that movie.
This might be the most, I don't know, eclectic, versatile man.
Yeah, that's a way to put it. Yeah, full stop.
And he's from Austria. I really do want to discuss, like...
Oh, what up?
Let me talk to you, Frankie.
Oh, well, he moved to LA at the age of 4. But still, I want to have this conversation with him about his music videos.
Yeah, just, hey, why are you like this? Explain yourself.
Oh, goodness.
Explain yourself.
Right.
He also did commercials. I wonder what commercials he directed. Anyway, let's move on to the next
thing. Oh, man, I got
to
find a list of that. But yeah, what's next?
Alien Earth, I guess?
Is Alien Earth?
Yeah.
Ooh, something I can contribute to.
Yeah,
woo.
Let's get weird.
Look at that. Okay, so Alien Earth is a TV show created by Noah Hawley, who did Legion and I think Fargo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also did.
It's what he's most known for, probably. It stars, it's a lot of people.
So many people.
Sidney Chandler, like Alex Lothar, Essie Davis, Samuel Benkin, Babu Sise, Adarsh Gurov, Irana James, Lily Newmark, Jonathan Ajayi, a bunch of people. We're going to throw Timothy Oliphant in there because he's really important. And it's the premise is... I mean, aliens on Earth, but it's really not about that at the end of the day. It's much more about other stuff. But you do get aliens
alien
on Earth.
Movie.
That is true. A ship crashes and, oh shit, the aliens, they're on Earth now. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
That's basically.
It had, I think, 9 episodes, and it just ended recently. And I saw all of it. Gabby saw about half of it.
Yeah, I've seen half of it.
How do you feel about the half that you saw?
I am unsettled and waiting for shit to go down. Full disclosure, I do not like scary things. I'm only watching this because my boyfriend wants me to watch it with
him. Mm,
yeah. And we've been working our way through the entire Alien,
nice. That's
universe,
fun.
I guess.
I did that last year.
Yeah. Oh, also, this takes place 2 years before the first Alien movie.
Oh, okay.
We should probably say that.
Good to know.
It's weird. I don't like a few of the characters, but you're not meant to, right? Because you're supposed to not like them because capitalism. I mean, the real villain of the Alien movies is capitalism.
Yo.
and forced births.
I feel like this and Romulus, maybe just because I haven't seen the other ones as recently, but they hit in the capitalism. They got Elon Musk just cooking up in this.
For real. But also, no, it's always been the corporations trying to get these alien creatures, and they do not care about the human employees that are going out to get them. They only care about gaining the assets, right? That's the vibe you get from the first movie and then everyone after. And this one's really bringing back that theme.
Mm-hmm.
Romulus felt like it was just these poor desperate kids getting just murked on this one ship.
Sounds like Francis Lawrence.
That was Romulus. Like aliens.
That too.
Yeah. That said, yeah, unsettled. Some stuff's going down. Mm-hmm. Some people are malfunctioning.
Mm-hmm. As they do.
Someone's about to get killed, I think. A bunch of people have already been killed, but you know. I'm unsettled.
Yeah.
As usual with alien movies.
I love this show so much. When I said I was learning things about myself, it's how down I am with body horror, because that eyeball creature is one
creature.
Of my favorite
things
I have ever seen, ever.
It made me so uncomfortable.
I love it. I love it so much. It's my favorite thing. I'm so glad it's going to stick around.
I don't like it. I hate it.
For reference, it's a creature that it's an eye on some tentacles. And what it does is it pulls your eye out and then burrows in there and like takes over your brain.
Yeah.
And you get to see
But your body is...
Talk about
your
show, the less I want to watch it.
Oh, yeah. It's horrifying.
It's not a Demi show.
It's not for you. And then there's a leech creature. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
No, thank you.
Oh, you haven't gotten to the flies yet. That shit's nasty. It's
disgusting
every episode.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's the best.
The flies that are in that cocoon thing that we don't even know what it is yet. Yeah,
oh, the cocoon shows up at the end. I feel like that was a little underwhelming, but
No, not the cocoon thing. Like the flies are in like the hive right now. They don't know what's in there.
That'll happen.
They just like have it. Yeah, I know. I've seen the beginning of that scene.
Yeah.
Where like Darwin goes in there. Yeah, no thanks.
I love this show so much. It's so good. And like, because I went into it thinking like, all right, give me a xenomorph. And they deliver over and over and over and over and over. Like, it's not shy about xenomorphs, multiple xenomorphs in various stages of life, which is really interesting.
Yep.
But it's a lot more than that too. Because you've got all the corporation stuff, but then you have stuff about like, what does it mean to be human?
Yes.
And are you still yourself if it's like your personality, your memories, your soul, but in a different body that isn't human?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so interesting, especially because the non-humans in like the synthetic people are children in adult bodies. So how does that work? And how do they navigate that?
It's weird and I hate it.
It's so weird, but it's good though.
I feel bad for the kids.
I feel really bad for them, especially because as the series goes on, it becomes very clear to them that they are considered property and not people and will be treated as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also like one of them might have magic powers or something. So whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Wendy's
one of them at least, right?
Every episode of this show, except for one, the flashback episode didn't really hit for me. I don't think we needed it. But everything else, I'm just like, yeah, I love this. Give me more of this. Make it disgusting. Someone's jaw gets ripped off in the next to last episode, and I cheered so loud. I'm sorry, it doesn't get ripped off. It gets like crushed. Like, I loved it.
What happens?
Someone's jaw gets crushed. You'll get there.
Yeah, that's
it's beautiful.
Not for me.
I love it.
Pretty wild, Cassie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I realized watching this show.
I'm not the girl for that, but...
Ooh, give me all that gore.
I respect you for liking it.
Stay tuned in a couple of years when we'll finally get to hear Cassie's review of the Mike Flanagan written body horror film about Clayface.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm not. That, I think, is probably going to disappoint me.
It's
body still
horror.
Clayface, and it's going to be Clay.
Flanagan.
It is. I just... You've set the bar at the eyeball creature in this show, and I don't think anything's ever going
to
meet it.
I hate that thing. It's so creepy.
It's so good.
Like, the
it's
way
so
the
cute.
Little girl reacted to it was like, yeah, valid.
It's great. And it...
Where she's like, actually, I can't handle this. Let me just freak out a little bit.
That's fair.
Like,
but also, it's so cute, and it's so cool, and it does cool
it
shit.
It was not cute. It was so
yes,
horrifying.
It was. Oh, my God. Gabby has no taste.
You guys are finding out so much about Cassie today, and to be honest, so are the rest of us.
It's not for me,
I wish y'all had been there to see me watch it, because I was fucking cheering. And it's funny, because there's a scene in one episode that had me just jaw open, like, this is disgusting. But then at the same time, like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Body horror. Love it.
Wild.
And you know what's funny? Is actually... That could lead as a segue to our next topic.
Ooh.
Because if Alien Earth doesn't do enough things going into people's eyes, can I recommend the last episode of Chief of War?
Uh-oh.
Which has something like that that was also extremely satisfying.
Ooh.
Interesting choice of words.
Okay, time to hear about Chief of War then.
Chief of War is created by Thomas Paul Sibet and Jason Momoa. It stars Jason Momoa, Lucien Buchanan, Teo Hinapehinga, Tekohe Tuhaka, Brandon Finn, a whole bunch of people. Temuera Morrison is, he's called a guest star, but that man is in it a lot. Also, fun fact, it's executive produced by Francis Lawrence. He's everywhere. Yeah.
That's great.
But basically, it's based on true events, but it's about the four kingdoms of Hawaii in a war, and it follows Jason Momoa's character, Kaiana, who is trying to find his place in that and settle things, and also foreigners show up at some point. You know, it happens.
As they do.
Yeah.
Damn Americans.
The most succinct way I can say to summarize Chief of War is that Chief of War is, to me, what I wanted Shogun to be.
Interesting.
Because...
it's a wild thing to say.
When I went into Shogun, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really interesting thing about, like, Japanese culture and history. And it was that, but filtered through the perspective of this white boy I didn't care about. And this is not that. This
That's
is filtered
not
through...
true.
Yes, it is. He is the focus
it
throughout the entire thing. Yes,
he's
it is.
He's not the only focus, though.
He's not the only focus, but he is a... to me, what I like about this is that it doesn't do... you don't have, like, a point of view character for the audience. You don't have a, you don't know this culture, so we're going to introduce someone to... no, they're just like, nah, fuck it. Get used to it.
They're like, we're going to throw you right in.
The closest you get to that is when one of the Hawaiians goes somewhere else.
Right.
And he's with all the white people, and they're like, this vibe is not good. But...
these white men are dangerous.
These white men are dangerous, except you can take their guns and do fun things with them, which is great. But this show, it fucking rocks. And I think mainly it rocks because I think the women in this show are some of the best written characters I've ever seen. Because it's like they live in a patriarchal society. And so it's not necessarily about them like... grabbing power, but it's about them manipulating the men without the men really knowing that it's happening.
Yes, the woman is the neck and she turns the head wherever she wants.
It's that's what Shout it is. I mean, because it's about Kaiana, but then also there's Kamehameha, who is a historical Hawaiian king who did unite Hawaii as one kingdom. So you know that that's coming. But it's like, yeah, he's there, but he's not as important as his wife. Kaahumanu is incredible. I mean, she just is constantly talking to these men and getting them to do what she wants, but not in a manipulative way, in a, no, I know what the fuck I'm talking about, and you don't know what the fuck you're talking about way. I have the best idea, and you know I have the best idea, so listen to me when I talk. And, oh my God, it's so good. And I just like, I don't know, it just does a bunch of stuff I wasn't expecting. Subplots that could very easily have become these two characters have to bicker over this become one stated apology and everybody's fine again. It's I just like, it's also beautiful. It's shot beautifully. I think a lot of it was in New Zealand, but it's filled with like Hawaiian actors. They speak Hawaiian for almost all of it. There's some English thrown in there, and I never quite know when, like what the rationale is for why sometimes they'll do English and sometimes they'll do Hawaiian, but it's mostly Hawaiian. And that's super fucking cool because I haven't really heard Hawaiian. And now there's 8 episodes of almost all Hawaiian. And it's super awesome.
That is really cool. Actually, as somebody who's been doing a lot of research on Hawaiian culture.
Yeah. And like, you know, there's a major, major battle scene in the last episode. And I think everybody in that is Hawaiian because they said, that's what we're going to do. If we're going to do this battle that literally happened in Hawaiian history, we're going to make it ours and we're going to show our people doing it. And it's... fucking awesome. And that is the battle where somebody gets something stabbed into their eye and you actually do see it go in. Like I thought they were going to cut away and I was like, no, we're doing it. We're doing it. Yeah, we're fucking doing it.
Sounds rough.
Also in that same battle, someone's tongue gets ripped out and then bitten into. It's hot. It's hot. We love it here.
Hot, huh?
It's hot. Right. Okay. Listen, Jason Momoa is hot. And then he goes over, rips this man's tongue out, and just takes a bite out of it and tosses it aside. That's hot. You can argue with the wall. Girl, I don't give a fuck.
Do your thing. Whatever. You like it, I love it.
If you like it, I love it.
Trying not to yuck anybody's yum out here, I have additional questions.
And I am happy to provide answers anytime. But yeah, I just like, this show is so good and it's so interesting to see. You know, it's historical fiction, so I don't know how much of it is accurate, but it's just interesting to see a story that I don't know anything about that to some extent actually happened, represented and told, and it's really beautiful and really an exploration of Hawaiian culture, and I would highly, highly recommend it. I think it's really great, and I don't know, for a show called Chief of War, the Chief of War wasn't really all that much of a focus, and I think it was better for it.
Nice.
Okay.
All right, guys, those are all of our reviews. Before we head out for the day, I'm going to ask you guys this question that I asked you guys the last time we did one of these episodes, where we haven't really gathered up any news in pop culture for today's episode. However, I want to know, has there been anything that has popped up recently that you are super excited about in the upcoming future?
Ooh.
Mm.
Most of the news I read is bad, so...
All right, well then I'll start us off. Just got a trailer for the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, which comes out next year. Obviously, I'm very excited as a Star Wars fan. Also, was very excited to see that it was not the same footage that I saw at Star Wars Celebration, which is very cool. But yeah, I really like that show. Love it to a certain extent, and I'm really excited to see what Jon Favreau does with a movie of these two characters. I love my baby boy Grogu. And he's the cutest thing. Maybe not the cutest thing in all of Star Wars, but he's definitely fighting as the cutest thing. You know, there's a competition definitely going.
Yeah.
We just got a new trailer out for Wicked for Good, which is coming out in November. So obviously super stoked for that. You know, fandom is going crazy in the club right now. And I love watching it. I love being a part of it. It's very, very cool.
Oh, it's not new at all. It's actually... very, very old. But Perfect Blue is coming to theaters, and I'm going to watch it. And this is an anime movie that I've never seen, but the weeb homies are like, yo, it's great. It's amazing. I love a good psychological thriller, and I've been wanting to watch more like animated horror, which is not a whole lot of a thing in Western animation because we're like, it's for kids. Mm, scare the kids. But Japan is like, nah, bro. Draw that fear. So yeah. Shout out Perfect Blue. Everybody who's seen it tells me it's great. And now I'm going to be one of those people.
Nice.
Critical Role Campaign 4 is starting in the next few days as of this podcast coming out. And I am super excited for that, obviously. And there's going to be a change of format. Matthew Mercer, who is usually our DM, is now a player. And Brennan Lee Mulligan will be DMing.
Oh,
and
yes!
I do love when Brennan DMs. He's very, very good. I love all the stuff that he's done for Critical Role so far. And I'm usually very inspired while watching him DM to like actually play D&D. I mean, I am when Matthew Mercer is also DMing too. Man, the stuff he writes, sometimes I'm just like, how? How? This is beautiful. And it's only for a D&D game. What the heck are we doing out here?
Nice.
Ooh. I have something, but it's not a movie.
It doesn't have to be.
Okay, cool. So my favorite author, damn, she's been having a year. She's releasing like 5 different things this year, including she just announced that she's releasing an audiobook with Spotify. So that comes out in November. And then her sequel to her previous book, Bride, called Mate, which is like an Omegaverse book, is coming out October 7th. So those are the ones I'm looking forward to.
Not on my birthday. God.
Allie Hazelwood, I love you so much.
People got to go into heat when they go into heat. Sometimes it's on your birthday.
She did hit that there was going to actually be like going into heat in this book. And I'm like,
it's an Omegaverse book. There better be.
I mean, there wasn't the last time, but that's because it was like vampire.
It's Omegaverse, and I'm obsessed.
Vampire and werewolf.
Explain what the Omegaverse is for the audience.
No, we will not.
Okay, I will try.
Absolutely not.
Omegaverse, to give a very brief, very, very brief overview. Typically, society is kind of divided into different classes of people. You've got the alphas, the betas, and the omegas, and that usually implies some sort of weird sexual thing. The alphas are like dom tops. The omegas are like super submissive and breedable, quite literally breedable. Mpreg is very common. They go into heat. It's a whole thing. I don't really know what role the betas play because, to be honest, Omegaverse freaks me out. And I don't enjoy it.
But this one's just like Omegaverse with werewolves.
Sexual dynamics.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, sometimes people change the rules based off of whatever they're writing. Like, I feel like there's like a general broad set of rules and there's like, you make exceptions when you're writing the thing.
Yeah, people tweak it. That's like a general overview.
And this is a very tame version of that. It's like
keep it tame.
Werewolves and vampires.
Go crazy.
Yeah. Super. Well, this author is doing a very tame. Approachable.
Oh, how are you going to do werewolves and keep it tame? What about Rut and the whole concept of that? And the
I mean, that's what we're getting into in this book. And there's nodding. There was nodding in the last book.
I'm not going to read it, but good. If you're going to do it, do it.
It was, but it is very much like a tame intro into that whole mess. Not mess. I would not call it a mess, but you know, that whole deal, that whole vibe. Anyway, can't wait. Really excited.
Yeah. Last thing that I'm super excited for, Renee Raff is currently on tour and I'm going to go see her in concert in October. Hey. So I'm super hyped. Nice. And I've been trying to avoid videos of her like on tour right now, but it's very hard to do. Especially when one of my friends already saw her in Chicago. So, But I'm super excited. I'm super, super freaking pumped right now.
I have a follow-up question for Gabby.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. I don't know a lot about nodding, but given what I've been told by Cassie, my follow-up question is, Gabby, are you a furry?
I'm not. Nope.
Say the whole phrase.
Say the thing.
I'm not a furry.
Gabby.
It's been a while.
Embrace it.
It's been a while since we've heard
but
Gabby's
I'm
catchphrase.
Not. Leave me alone.
I have an emblem of my persona tattooed on my body. There's a point at which you just kind of go with it. And I think you're there.
Girly,
have you showed us this?
I haven't seen this tattoo.
I've seen it.
Okay.
I haven't.
The square is too small.
Oh,
right now,
yes, but... I have seen this. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Cassie gave in. She came out of the horror closet.
Oh,
Gabby, you got to come out the furry closet.
I'm not a furry.
I wonder if this podcast will last as long enough for that to happen.
You're already into Omegaverse.
Absolutely
I feel
not.
Like if you can
I feel
do
like
Omegaverse,
a lot of people like
furry,
the Omegaverse that aren't fairies. And I mostly am only reading Allie Hazelwood because it's Allie Hazelwood and I love her so much.
Uh-huh. Okay. Sure. But you're doing
right,
the werewolves.
She's my numero uno.
Well, audience, I hope you guys have had fun with this one.
I did.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good way to come back. We came back with Gabby's catchphrase.
We really went for it.
We did. So thanks for joining us for all of that. We love y'all. Thanks to Cran Digital, Brandon and Io for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Demi, thank you for editing and putting us on YouTube and telling us about Eleanor the Great. Gabby, thank you for talking about half of Alien Earth.
And, welcome, I got you.
Werewolf dicks, even though you're not a furry. Thanks for that.
Not a furry.
Yeah, those two things make
Leave
sense
me alone.
Together.
Leave me alone.
Cassie, thank you for the first time ever, I think, being the one who watched the most things we reviewed in the episode. Look at you.
Yeah. Yep.
Look at you, employee of the month.
And yet, I would be willing to guarantee that my lists are still not going to hit 10 by the end of the year.
No, probably not.
Probably so not. Funny. Yeah, me either, though, Cassie. Like, let's be honest.
My actors list just hit 10, and I'm super excited about it.
Love that for you. And then Cassie's music list is going to have, like, 36, and she's not going to have any honorable mentions. She's going to cut off 26 of them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Anyway, audience, if you want to reach us, you can do that in the comments, or you can hit us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast, or Facebook.com/CreativeDifferencesPC if you're still on Facebook. You're probably not. Or you can go to TikTok, where people actually are, and find us at Creative Differences Pod. If you would like to join our support group for people who have watched The Long Walk, you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at a King Name Symbol.
Hi, I'm Gabby. You can find me on the Instagrams at Stegosaurio.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Sassy Soothsayer. Please recommend me some Monster Fucker books because I'm into my first one and I'm feeling
it. Girly Pop, I have some for you.
Of course you do.
And, oh, that's great, because I'm looking for het books, and yeah, let's go.
I got some for you, girl.
Yes.
If you want to read an more articulate version of my review of Eleanor the Great, you can find me on Letterboxd at Demi Joie. Joie is spelled J-O-I-E. You can also go into the comments and talk to me about my favorite lesbians, who happen to be Renee Rapp and Aaron Kellyman at the moment. So
that tracks. All right. It's been different. Sorry, guys. I didn't talk about Marvel Zombies because I didn't finish it. But next time I might do that. So stay tuned. We don't know what we're going to do next time. Maybe that. Maybe something else.
Who knows? Not me.
Not me. It's been different. Bye.
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 We know now that Francis Lawrence makes or has made commercials. Wouldn't it be wild if he made that Incest Vultures commercial?
Girl, I don't think he did. That would be wild.
I hope he did.
Well, I think we can find who the director is, because remember they did that interview with the people who made it.
I hope he directed it and Ari Aster wrote it.
Girl. I bet Ari Aster did write it.
Ari Aster would.
So much is happening here.
Didn't he do like the Meet the Johnsons?
Yeah.
We don't talk about that. Yeah. We don't talk about that.
We don't.
Shit was
we don't.
Crazy.
We don't talk about Bruno.
We don't talk about Ari.